fully on public transport. This is now on. But anyway, we're going to do the presentation on behalf of the department. The presentation, Chairperson, honorable members, we tried to divide it into three areas. We recently conducted a study on subsidization in South Africa just to check whether how do we compare with other countries, developed and developing countries. So we'll share with you some few outcomes of the study, but I think the core of the presentation will then look at the status quo on subsidies in South Africa and the interventions that the department has embarked on in order to improve the transport service in the country. So as the outline of the presentation, we look at the background information, which will include status quo in the country, as well as the international review process that we have done, and look at the investment in public transport, the way forward in terms of the transformation plan that we presented to provinces and MECs. But I think key also look at the funding requirement for subsidy vis-a-vis the current funding regime that we have and the implementation program that we proposed, as well as the success factors that can make the whole plan, transmission plan, to succeed, and then we will conclude. Just as a way of background, for the past 14 years, subsidized bus contracts, and I want to emphasize that currently when we talk of public transport subsidy, it's buses and rail. We're talking about bus contracts. The bus contracts remain stagnant. And just to give you a background, the current contracts were signed, most of them, the interim contracts were signed in 1997. The idea was that in 2000, all those contracts will have been issued out to tender in line with the white paper on transport of 1996. Few contracts were signed in terms of the tender contract. I think it was in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng, some in Gauteng. I think the most province that signed tender contract back then was the province of KwaZulu-Natal and a few in Gauteng. Then there were challenges which stopped the process. I think one was the issue of the updating amendment of Act. But a key one was the funding. There was no enough funding to do tender contract in the country. So we had to, there was a moratorium which was then implemented. Unfortunately, from 2003, most of those contracts, the decision was taken by then, by midnight then, which was Mincom, to say all contracts must be extended on a month-to-month basis until we introduce new services and funding was made available. Unfortunately, the funding has not been sufficient for us to issue up new contracts, and most, if not all, of these contracts have been extended on a month-to-month since 2003. It has become a problem as we speak. The current contracts are dated in terms of the routes, passenger volumes, passenger kilometers. That's why I think when we look at bus services, contracted bus services in the country, we see poor quality, and it shows that the public transport system is in distress. Last year we had a query from the Office of the Auditor General that we need to regularize this month to month. And some provinces have now been warned that they will get qualification on audit options for irregular expenditure because of this ongoing month-to-month extension for the past 10 years. The other challenge is that in some areas there are no integrated transport plans which has to be developed by contracting authorities, which are municipalities. And based on that, we believe that there's an urgent need to stabilize the current environment. Even though as we go on, you will see that there are interventions that we have brought in as a department, but there needs to make sure that the current system doesn't collapse. One of the things that we have looked at seriously was Section 41 of the National Land Transport Act, which provides us an option to say if we want to improve the current services, we can go the route of a negotiated approach. It is allowed by the Act in Section 41. We believe that as a measure, a negotiated approach will assist in bringing in the taxes, because then, if you look at Section 41, 1 it says one of the intentions for negotiated contracts in the Act was to promote economic empowerment of small business or persons previously disadvantaged by unfair discrimination. So we're looking at that option to say, when we bring in new contracts, we'll go the negotiated route so that we can bring the marginalized operators as well as the taxis into the fold. This slide just gives us the indication of the main mode of travel in terms of the national household travel. Today, the bulk of our people, our commuters, if you look at the slide there, it's, I think 25% they travel by taxis, 9 and 6, which is 15% is train and bus. So the majority of our commuters are using taxis, but as you speak, currently taxis are not subsidized. Now, how do we compare with other countries, and developed and developing countries? The study that I've indicated shows that worldwide, public transport is mostly subsidized, operationally and capital. It's capital subsidy, operational subsidy. The reason for subsidization is that it is important for the functioning of the economy. It is important for social equity, where people who cannot afford are provided the opportunity to use public transport, and also to improve the transport system. So most countries that we have looked at, they are subsidizing for various reasons. That's why we believe that even in South Africa, we are on the right track in terms of subsidizing public transport. But now the question is, how much subsidy is needed? Just this slide talks about countries that are pro-public transport. When you look at South Africa, we are spending in the region of 20, we are among the countries that are spending between 20 and 25% of the GDP on transport. The slide only indicates that countries that are not pro-public transport, that are allowing car usage, are spending much. The cost of transport is too high. When you compare with wealthy Asian countries that are pro-public transport, and the cost of transport is low. The reason for cost of transport being low is that when we allow people to use cars, it has an impact on the economy, issues around greenhouse gas emission, issues around you have to expand on your infrastructure on the road. Now the total cost for transport becomes expensive. But when people start using public transport, we save on issues of emission, we save on issues of building more infrastructure for private car users. So the slide just shows that in developing cities where there are low densities, if the densities are low, we'll spend much, and if we are not using public transport. The second slide shows that when people start using public transport, the cost of transport reduces. The more people use, whether you use public transport or whether you use non-motorized transport, the cost of transport reduces. This one shows the problem we have in South Africa of densities. The study has shown that cities that has got a lot of people, we call them compact cities, building around urban areas, they spend less because you have the volumes. The one on developed countries shows that when the density increases, so the fare collection, you don't rely on subsidy because you have the numbers. But the problem in South Africa is that our spatial development, we are building away and away from the core economic centers, which is what we call urban sprawl. And that takes that we have to spend more because we don't have the numbers. So in most cases, as you see in some of the slides that we show in when we look at the South African context, you are forced to use the bus only in the morning and in the afternoon because of the long trips. And during the day, the bus will park because there are no volumes and no densities. So this slide just shows that if we can improve the way we plan our land use, and we can also save on public transport. The last slide on the international review. We compared ourselves with other countries in terms of how we spend. This slide shows South Africa, our densities are low and the quality of transport is low. Now, if this line, we are saying this is an operational line, all the countries that fall this side of the operational line, it means they have to pay subsidies. If you fall outside here, it means you don't need subsidy. Now, if we are here where the quality is low and the density is low, we have to move. For us to close this gap, we need more subsidy. You have developed Asian countries like your Singapore, which have got high quality and high density. They don't need subsidy because they've got the volumes. The public transport is of high quality. It just attracts people to use it. They've got numbers, so they, out of the fare box, they are able to cover operational costs. But you have other countries like the USA where the quality is high, the density are low. Now they have to pay a lot of subsidy to maintain the public transport system. So the slide just shows that if the quality is low, the density are low, we will have to pay high subsidies for us to assist operators to break even and to make profit. So those are the slides that we have just extracted from the study, from the report. I think it's a comprehensive report that we can share with the committee. Now, how is the situation in South Africa? In South Africa, we have different types of contracts. Look at the far north in the Limpopo. We have rural. Most of the services in Limpopo are rural. In Gauteng, you have long urban commuter routes. Those that know Gauteng, the longest trips in the country are from Mpumalanga to Gauteng. A lot of people who stay in Mpumalanga work in Gauteng. So that is the nature of the contract services there. Then you will have the ones in the Eastern Cape, and then Eswatini, which serves more rural areas. So we have a mix of contracted services. Funding. From 1994 in South Africa, there has been a steady increase in subsidy. We are now at around, by 2009-10, we were in the region of 3.5 billion subsidies for bus contracts of 3.5 billion. Last year was 4.3 in the current financial year, which ends this month. We're spending 4.3 billion. But that increase has not been enough. When you look at this presentation, I mean, at this portion of the site, this has been the actual increase, but the real increase has been around four average over the years. It's because the difference between what we really get from Treasury and what is going to be spent by operators is that even though Treasury gives us 6%, the bulk of that 6% goes to fuel increase, goes to labor costs. So the real increase you'll find that is minimal, it's around 3%. For example, from 1994, fuel had doubled. It was increasing at a double figure than CPI. It is increasing at around 11.2%, whereas CPI was increasing around 6%. So even though there's this increase in subsidy, but the real subsidy is very minimal, because the operators will use whatever increase to get to deal with issues of labor. Labor costs have been in the region of 8 to 10% over the years. So the amount of increase that can be used for additional services or to improve services is very minimal. That's why we have not seen growth in terms of new services. The other thing that happened, Honorable Members and Chairperson, is that from 2009, when you see there was this expenditure increased and then allocation was less. In fact, from 2005, we were spending more than what we got from Treasury. In 2008, We had a situation where we overstretched our budget by 1.2 billion. And from 2009, Treasury then took the decision that our subsidies in South Africa will be paid in terms of the Division of Revenue Act as a public transport operation grant. That is a supplementary grant, meaning that if there is any additional funding requirement, provinces are responsible. So it has created a problem for us, because most provinces have not historically budgeted for bus subsidies. So it's a problem that we're trying to deal with, negotiating with Treasury. But as we speak, subsidies are public transport operations grants, and they are supplementary. So any province that need additional, they have to pop out of their own budget. In terms of the number of contracts, we have 110 contracts. This slide shows the spread of the number of contracts per province. We have 27 interim contracts. These are the contracts that I spoke about, the ones that were signed in 1997 as interim measures for 3 years. Unfortunately, we still have 27 of those running on a month-to-month, and they have never been put out to tender negotiated. We have got 69 tenders, and as you will see, the bulk of those tender contracts are in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng. Then we have a few negotiated contracts in Northwest and in Mpopo and Free State. The total budget for subsidy for the previous year was 4.3 billion, separate indicator. Just to show where the bulk of the subsidy goes, 38% of the budget goes to Gauteng, then you see our provinces. I think the next is KZN that gets the bulk, then Western Cape, and the others are getting minimum, 4% this day, 2% Northwest. I think I need to qualify on Northwest and Limpopo because of historical reasons. Northwest is paying the bulk of the subsidy out of their own budget because of historical reasons. Those that came from what we used to call the TBVC state, they had the subsidy budget. And when the new government came into province, those provinces carried the head from that was Northwest and to a certain extent Eastern Cape and Mpopo. They are still paying the bulk of the subsidy out of their own equitable share. So those are the three provinces that historically, because they had homeland systems, are still paying. Here we are showing that 67% of the budget still goes to interim contracts. These contracts that were signed in 1997 and were never converted. The problem with this system is that interim contracts are not monitored. Standard contracts and negotiated contracts are monitored. When we sign a new contract, whether we put it out of tender or we negotiate, we also appoint a monitoring company to go and monitor the services so that they are penalized if they are not providing good things. Interim contracts, by their nature, are not monitored. Unfortunately, 67% of the budget still goes to those contracts that are not being monitored. Provinces are trying, since 2009, because of the introduction of PTOG, they are trying to monitor. But even if they monitor, they can't penalize them because it's not part of the contract. So you just monitor to improve, to try and work with operators to improve services. These are the contracts that we are saying, in terms of the intervention, we need to change them as soon as possible if we get funding, and so that they can start taking up in terms of their service. This is the slide I was talking about, Honorable Members and Chairperson. Just to compare on the issue of productivity level. At face value, it looks like when we compare ourselves with international benchmarks, ourselves internationally, it looks like the operating subsidy per user in South Africa is too high. When you look at this picture, you will see that kilometers, for example, the highlighted area, kilometers per bus per day. Let me take passengers. Passengers per bus per day ranges between 130 to 200. Meaning that the buses are carrying around 130 to 200 passengers per day. Internationally, the benchmark is 1,000. This is where the issue of volumes comes in. That's why in countries like, in cities like Casablanca, Tunis, Algiers, which we have looked in the study, our statistics are 5 to 7 times less than those cities. Same goes with the passengers per bus. In when we look at the world benchmarking, internationally, the same three cities we have looked at, Casablanca, Tunis, African countries, carrying around 4 passengers per kilometer, whereas ours, the average is 1. So you will see when you start working a subsidy per person, it looks that as if South Africa we are paying high. But the reality is that we are not, because of things like the long distances and the affordability level in South Africa. Because of the densities and the distances that the operators have to cover, that's why we are paying more. But it does not necessarily mean that actually we are spending outside our limit. It is the situation that forces us to pay that. In terms of current public transport investment, here we just wanted to show that sometimes we had to look at the overall subsidization rather than zooming only on the bus subsidies. We are spending in the region of 20 billion, 20 to 24, almost 25 billion, on public transport funding. This is public transport grants, we have bus subsidies, we subsidize in BRASA, operational subsidies, we are subsidizing the minibus taxis through the taxi recapitalization problem. This is a combination of capital subsidy and operational subsidy. We subsidize how trade. The total that we are spending is around 23 to 25 billion annually for public transport. We just show this slide to make a case. We have started to engage trade to say we might start looking at the possibility of consolidating these different subsidies instead of having a tax recap, a public transport infrastructure system grant, the public transport operations transition subsidies. We need to look at bringing them together and improving our efficiency, because when they operate in isolation, there are no efficiencies. What are the interventions? What I've said relates to bus contracts. As I've indicated when I started, taxis are not getting an operational subsidy. They are getting capital subsidy in terms of the taxi cap. The intervention that we are looking at as a department, I think honorable members will know that in 2007, the cabinet approved a public transport strategy. This strategy looked at integrated public transport network systems. We no longer want to go for bus contracts, rail contracts, or big subsidies. We want to look at public transport subsidies. That's where the idea of the work comes in. Now, the strategy says we should look at different solutions for different areas. Your main metros, that's where we are advocating for BRT systems. BRT systems with dedicated bus lanes, a new station, new fleet, operational controls, and those state of the art. That's your Rea Vaya, your IRT. But we believe that not every city has to go the BRT route, because the experience we have learned from Gauteng and from Western Cape is that the BRT in its nature is very expensive in South Africa, especially if you don't have the volumes. You will have to pay high subsidies. So that's why we are saying BRTs should be for main metros. Other emerging cities, your smaller cities, our integrated transport plans, guys came with the term to say you look at BRT light, something which is not full BRT but it resembles BRT. Instead of having dedicated lanes for buses, you can have priority lanes, where those lanes can be used by other traffic or peak. You don't have to build a new system. You don't need elaborate stations for smaller cities and other emerging metros. Towns, we are saying we need a formal system, bus system which will be intertwined with midi buses, taxis, comes into the floor where you have your corridor service by high fleet, and then the other services like a minibus and taxis act as feeders. It becomes a network, and all of them will be subsidized. Rural areas, we break them into two. We are saying you look at high density rural and other rural areas and sparse rural, where you might need, people just need public transport, maybe once or twice or three times, depending on the needs of the community. So we are saying, let's look at different solutions for different areas. This is the proposal that we have submitted to the Committee of Ministers, LMEC. In terms of way forward, we have already touched on the programs there. We believe that we should adopt a two-pronged approach. As I indicated, the two-pronged approach is that we need to arrest the collapsing services. When we are talking about BRT and integrated transport plans and stuff like that, those need time, because you have to improve infrastructure, you have to have funding. Those who have been following the Rea Vaya model and the Cape Town model have seen that it takes long. Even for phase one, it has taken more than 7 years. Now phase one is in Gauteng, has taken more than 7 years, and it's only limited. I mean, I think it's around 60 kilometers. The entire network in Gauteng is 380 kilometers. Now, for them to complete that, if it takes you 7 years to do the BRT in 60 odd kilometers, it means it will take time. We are in, that's where we are going. But at the meantime, we don't need to stop and do nothing. We are saying, while we are moving towards integrated public transport networks, which will be integrating all modes, we need to stabilize the current system, do away with the month-to-month contracts in terms of negotiated contracts, sign contracts where services will improve in the meantime while we are transiting to the long-term objective of IPTA. So that will be the first phase. We have proposed that the first phase, let's look at the current contracts, issue out new contracts, which will bring in the taxis to a certain level, and then let's move to the second phase, which will be integrate, full integration. This is determined by the cost. As you will see, just to elaborate on the first phase. First phase, say funding permitting, you identify contractors, you target them, you bring the road players that will be affected by the new contract, then you issue out those contracts in terms of a negotiated approach. The second phase, full integration. This is where we are saying different solutions for different cities. High density urban setup, you need dedicated infrastructure, that's your BRT. Low density, you just need quality public transport, you don't need to go to be elaborate. And then we ensure the integration of buses and taxis to complete the public transport services. One of the issues that I've raised is that look at consolidating the funding streams, those infrastructure systems, grant, tax recap, PTOG, we bring them together into one fold. This has been the plan that we presented to the minister and the MECs, and it has been approved in principle. Now the first phase that we are talking about, just to stabilize those services that are in the process of collapsing, need an additional 1.7 billion. Our budget for 2018-14 for bus contract is 4.5 billion. If we start there, we need an additional, we thought this plan was presented last year, and then we thought maybe by 2018 we'll get additional funding. We didn't get any money. So we are targeting 2014. We're still going to engage children. But over an MTF period, we need an additional 1.7, in the estimated 1.7 billion, for us to stabilize the services. Full integration, we need around 12 billion. This is total integration. It is almost three times the current budget. And the study that we have conducted, that I indicated, also came out to the same conclusion, that because of the backlog, if we are going to go full integration, bringing taxis, bringing integrating taxis, buses, and other bus companies that are currently not subsidized, we will need in the region of 12 billion for that. So it all depends on funding. Stabilization, which will be our first place, need an additional 1.7. Full integration, we need something like an additional 8 or 7 point something billion. This was a proposed program. This was just a proposal in terms of provinces to say which operator can go out when, but it was just a proposed implementation plan, which will change, obviously, depending on funding. How much we get in 2014 will then determine which operators are ready and then which one will go first. So it was just an initial implementation program. For this plan to succeed, there are a number of issues. The first is funding. If we don't get money, unfortunately we're stuck. We can't even talk about new services anywhere in the future. So adequate additional funding, and that funding has to be sustainable. This is a discussion we are busy with National Treasury. They've raised their concerns about funding, but we still going. We have presented it to a portfolio committee on transport to need assistance. Institutional structures. One of the things that has delayed, which triggered the issue of planning, is that planning has to happen at at a planning authority level, which are municipalities. And we know the challenges at municipal level, issues around capacity. So we are in the process of amending legislation, because the Act, the National Land Transport Act, currently says provinces are no longer contracting authorities. No province can enter into a new contract because they are not the contracting authority. National is not a contracting authority. The contracting authority for new services is a municipality. That's how the Act says it. It has created a problem. We had numerous discussions with provinces and municipalities. Some of the smaller municipalities, they don't even have the capacity. You have one person there dealing with everything. So we are in the process of amending the legislation to allow provinces to assist the municipalities in terms of developing the plans and even acting as contracting authorities on behalf of those municipalities that they cannot do the function. The support, uniform standard and guidelines, monitoring and evaluation. National will spearhead that process to monitor progress in planning authorities. Of course, we also need commitment from leadership, management, stakeholders alike. We know we have to engage the bus industry, we have to engage the taxi industry, and then communication will be key for commitment from both stakeholders within and outside government. Legislation, certain and uncertainty, I've already touched on that. The issue around the contracting roads is in the process of being amended. We believe that these are the key pillars for the plan to succeed. If they don't, they become risks. If funding is not there, it's a risk, it means we are stuck. So goes with the issue of legislation certainty. So this is a plan that we presented. In terms of the way forward, it was approved by the Minister Committee, which is the MINEC, last year, September. But funding remains key for everything that we want to do changes in terms of transformation and integration. The tax recapitalization program, which is a subsidy, a capital subsidy, we must differentiate between capital subsidy and operational. Taxes are not getting operational subsidy, but they are getting capital subsidy. This is through the TRP, the RIC program. That program will continue until taxes are fully integrated into the ministry. Currently, we are in a process of reviewing it to run for 2 years as a review process and then see how we can improve it. It will continue, but it might not continue in its current form. But for the coming 2 years, it will continue in its current state while we are looking at different options of improving the TRP. We had challenges with the TRP, some of the challenges that we want to address before it goes ahead, maybe in a different format. Efficiencies will have to be introduced in the TRP going forward, of course, in line with the PTOG, so that ultimately when we bring all these streams of funding together, there is improvement for public transport. Thank you, Chairperson. That brings us to the end of the presentation and our amendments. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation, but nevertheless, I'll allow the members to interact with you, to ask clarities or to ask you the questions and also to have their comments. I'll start with Mama Temba, followed by Honourable Member Kronevat, followed by Honourable Member Mlezane, and Honourable Member Jacobs. I'll be the last one.
Chairperson, thank you. The first one, I thank you for the presentation. The first one is on the taxi recapitalization program. I think this has been going on for quite a long time. I wonder whether the department is able to tell us how far are you, and do you have statistics as per province? Because the way it's going on and on and on and on, I wonder what, you know, what are you doing to make sure that you don't have this program for life? The other one that I want to know is whether the department has done any research on the economic impact of bus subsidies on taxi industry. The last one, what are the key elements of the bus subsidy reform strategy developed during 2012-2013? What are the key elements of the bus subsidy reform strategy developed that were developed during the 2010, 2012, and 2013? Your key elements of the bus subsidy reform. And thank you for your presentation. But I think we're talking about the normal. So I wonder, you went to the portfolio committee, you know, to get assistance. So what did the portfolio committee say? Maybe you can
deal
with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you from my side as well for the presentation. Chairperson, if we listen to the presentation, I think there's no nothing to be happy of at the end of the day. And we listen to you, and the whole time it is money, money, money. You need money for that, you need money for that. I'm a bit worried about that, because South Africa, that is the duty of government to see that there is a proper system in our communities for our people. But the main thing is we must make use of the money we have, but we must manage it in the right way. I think if I'm listening to you, there's also a lack of management in the whole system. How we are managing it, it's easier to manage it in big cities, but in the rural areas it is difficult. But we must manage it. With the money we've had, we must manage it, and we must see that we can deliver to our people, especially in our rural areas. That is the people who are suffering to get to ordinary places to buy their goods. And if there's no proper transport, we fail to deliver in that areas. And I've got a very strong feeling that is what happened now at this stage. I also want to know, how many consultants are you making use of? Because each and every time we hear, there's a lot of consultants who's helping here and helping there, and this year after year, and nothing happened. I want to know, how many is there in the department, and what is the budget amount for these people to help us and to see that we can better our transport system? I think there's a lot of money is wasted in our consultants as well. I also want to know, people are not traveling for free. In the trains, in the buses, what happened to that money we get from the tickets for all our passengers on the buses and on the train? That must be also a huge amount of money. Where is this money allocated to at the end of the day? And really, I want to say it again, our transport is not in a healthy condition in South Africa. I'm very worried about it. If we're reading our newspapers last week and the week before, people threaten transport again in our metro rail, that they are going to burn our trains again. And now they threaten the Gold train, because that is only for the rich people. And I think that is a totally a misperception what people have. And we must address it immediately and very urgently from the department side. We can't afford that people carry on when they are unhappy, they burn things down. Someone must pay at the end of the day to get that things back on track. And so we must educate our people, and the main thing is we are not on time with our transport. And that frustrated people, they get late to work and everything. We must have a system, we must have schedules. And that schedule must be on time. I know there's something like electricity in our country. They stole the cables and all the things that play a role. But not such a big role that we can, that is, the people are always late, or there's not enough transport to transport the people from point A to point B. And that frustrated the people. And that is why they started to burn our transport vehicles and things down. I also, the BTR, the BRTs system in province, I listen to what you've said, it is mainly in our big cities. I'm coming from the Northwest province. They started with the BRT system in Rustenburg. And now suddenly it stopped, because of that is what I hear. There's a lot of corruption taking place there. And I want to know, what role are you playing there? Because I visited Rustenburg last Sunday. And nothing is going on there. I can see they started, they built the cement roads where the bus must be on. And in front of the taxi place, it stopped there. And it stopped already for a long time. It's not the thing that stopped a week ago. It's already on for a long time. You can see it in the grass is growing all around and that kind of thing. What measures do you have in place to see that these things is going on? We can't afford that such a project stop and millions of rand is down into the drain again. You must do something about it, and that is in front of your door, is department, and you must deliver. We as politicians want you to deliver. That is why you as a department are there, and you must see that the people is doing their job. Otherwise, we must get rid of the whole department. And then, Chairperson, the crop boundaries. We had an emergency meeting the end of last year, just before the festival season. And since then, I do not know what is going on. We hear nothing, I hear nothing. Is there policies in place? The legislation, do you do something about it? Or are the people still going over the boundaries and they are going to kill each other because they are unhappy? They travel from the Gauteng right into Mozambique and right into Botswana and all these places, and they do not take these taxes of that country in consideration. I think that is also a big problem in our whole transport system in South Africa. I thank you.
Okay, I won't respond on this one, but some of you might fall across the border dispute, or whatever, the issue of the border dispute, to cross border. Okay, let me give it to Honourable Member Mlenzana.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also join colleagues in thanking the presentation. Chairperson, apparently the department is now understanding what we want in terms of approach when they make the presentation. I think we have to give an accolade to that. Very specific in terms of provinces. We are able to look into a province. But Chair, I will start, I've got only two questions, but the first one I will start with a comment. Chair, if you listen, there would then be a public perception that buses and trains are the ones who are only enjoying in terms of your subsidy grant, and the taxes are not. I'm saying public perception, Chair, because when you are talking tax subsidization, you are talking tax regap, which they may not necessarily take it as subsidy, because this other one, it's not a capital subsidy, it's a kind of operational subsidy, and it's in relevance, and they see it coming month by month and so on. So my question would then be, have the department engaged with these key stakeholders, particularly your bus operators and your taxi industry, with respect to the part of the reform strategy? And if yes, you have done so, can you provide us with details? Because, Chairperson, we are going for after Easter, we would be with the constituencies. We're going for constituency work. And these might be the questions that they would be, you know. So if we get that detail.
The second one, Chair, when I introduced myself, I said, maybe I didn't say it today, I said from the Eastern Cape. I didn't say representing the Ibas of the Eastern Cape. That's what I used to say. I think I'll go back to that one, Chair. It does not augur well to me, Chair, sitting here representing the interests of the province of the Eastern Cape when I hear that the bulk of the public transport operation grant goes to Gauteng, KZN, and Western Cape. There is this perception, once more, from all these departments, and I think it has to be explained all quarters. The way you are, you know, categorizing your attention is now to profit would be the bigger chunk to Gauteng, and for whatever reason there has been a change now. Everything is going to KZN, and nobody knows why. We would need an explanation. Why has KZN all of a sudden been lifted to be the province?
Is it that rural more than others? When you have got your Eastern Cape, if now we have to go to specific and details about how rural each province is, we would do that. The Western Cape, you are saying those with from the TV, the former TPDC states, your Transkei, where we had more than one and all, and Kerrigan and had Kashabutele there, but you don't regard KZN as being part of that. There is a special treatment. Western Cape, why? Why are you taking all the coal to Newcastle? Why would you take money to where, you know? So I'm being checked.
This has to be spread.
The last one. When you look at your statistics, the general household survey indicates that some provinces are more reliant on taxes for commuting than others. Now, have the strategies that you develop aimed at transforming public transport sector given consideration to prioritizing such provinces? Or what is it that informed? Thanks, Chairperson. If you have time, I'll come back.
Honorable Member Jacobs. Yeah, thanks, Chair. Let me first of all apologize for coming late. Our officials have forgotten me. It is because they've forgotten as they weep. And I don't weep them, that's why I defend it. Yeah, on a lighter note, thanks, Chair, and also for the presentation. Chair, when I listen to the latter part of the presentation, I'm just discouraged because most of the things theory. It does not go to the gist of what we want. And also, there's this complaint about funding. Money will always be scarce. There are no funds which are there. But what do we do with what we have? Because normally the departments would say there's enough funding. But you'll find that in the report there is wasteful expenditure, fruitless expenditure, irregular expenditure. So if you can prove to us what are you doing with what you have, so that when you come for extra funding, we are sure that we are going to use this money usefully. But as it is, I'm not convinced. I'm not even sure what has been done with the money that you have. Secondly, although you tried to touch on the issue of provinces, I'm just not happy because we would like to know the details of these provinces. For instance, last year we had been to Northern Cape, and there was a cry for public transport from Richmond to Hanover to DR. There is no transport from that area. So we'd like to know how is the department trying to address that. Last week we had been to Mpumalanga. There's this saying that we are moving from road to rail to transport coal and so on. And we don't have the details of that, you see. So I think something that we need to have and know how we are going to address that, not just giving us this framework. And there is this presidential infrastructure grant. You are trying to say you don't have funds. But from this infrastructure, how much are you going to get? Because I think it's another thing that is going to address the problems that you have. Because it deals with infrastructure. If it deals with infrastructure, it means it's going to be roads and so on and so on. So I think there must be a linkage between this department and also the presidential infrastructure grant. And You have indicated phase one and phase two, but I don't see time frames. Something is just brought, so it means it can be completed even after 10 years. I understand you don't have money, but what I'm saying, what do you do with the funds that you have?
because I think those funds must be used to the benefit of the transport system. Thank you.
Okay. Before I give it to other people, I want to come with this idea. You see, can give us in order to able to assist you. For an example, you spoke about you having a challenge of funding, and we are the ones who are supposed to vote for budget. Right, I'll start. You see, it's unfortunately, I don't know why, with your presentation you started by numbering them, but then as it goes on, there are no numbers. It's because I wanted, and it's not you alone. It's not you alone, it is the tenets of most of presenters that are in debt. Sometimes don't put it all together. Myself, I wanted to stick on your presentation. You see, somewhere you said, you spoke about the monitoring, that there's no monitoring. I don't know which page you start where you spoke about monitoring. And then also, on page 3, on the background, that's where I put the worry. That's where comes the question, who's supposed to monitor? Whose responsibility? Because here, on page 3, bulletin number 3, you spoke about that the H, you need to be pushed by the HE first before you start to do your work. Because the HE here, you said, the HE bulletin number 3 said, AGE has started to query the month-to-month nature of contracts leading to qualified audit. I don't think that's proper that the AGE should push you first. And then also you indicated that this contract was signed in 1997 during your presentation. My question would be, how long does it take to review? And then, again, good intention, like Kubabum Lenza said, you have the background information in section provided by for section 41(1)(b) of the NLTA number 5 of 2009. You said it says promoting the economic empowerment of the small business and persons previously disadvantaged by unfair discrimination or blah 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 blah. My question. How many small business are involved in that regard? Because I was looking at the timetable. You talk about Basco, a very big one. Tilly, in Mpumalanga, where I'm coming from. Speaking, even in Joburg, if it's about Basco, the people were previously advanced. They've had an analyst before. But how many small, which we are providing in terms of this section 41? Because here, in the timetable, the same. And then also, we wanted to ask from your own presentation, there's something which is worrying me here. You see, the background information about the funding history. Our study is something that started from 1994, the issue of fuel, why do we just explain? My question is that, I wanted you to find out, before I ask this one, from your study case, you said that you've done it in Casablanca and also in Algiers. Coincidentally, the committee we've been in Cuba. Have you considered to check that one as well? Because in Cuba, they are using subsidy most buses. There's a train is for goods. But it's very, very relevant for that particular situation. Since, or hence, Cuba was in an siege for more than 40 years, but they are surviving with the train subsidy, I mean the bus subsidy system. Therefore, and my question would be, why the government is speaking about the subsidy? I've got also a little experience in Indonesia. In Indonesia, in terms of their subsidy or transport, any public transport, they've got a time frame. For an example, to say a taxi must be on the road for 5 to 10 years. More than that, they chuck it out. But here in South Africa, a crisis. I don't know how long does it take. Because my worry is that you can't subsidize this corridor while it's not functioning. Whom are you paying? For what? Because at the end, I can have my own amapela and put them aside while receiving money from government, but practically I don't. Ferry people. Do you have a mechanism to monitor that as well? The rough way of the thing which you are subsidizing. For an example, it's very touchy. One bus recently which killed about 24 people from here in Western Cape, which was visited in Mpumalanga. These are some of the challenges. One, that they're just providing money, but you don't have monitoring mechanism to check what are you providing, what are you subsidizing. And then, also, I think it will be the last one. It will be the last one. Without checking anyway. As a department, do you have the capacity to monitor? I'll put it there. Mama Demba, you are the last one. I'd like to give them an opportunity to respond.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just move on. On page 14, if you can clarify us. You know, it's really difficult to understand what it's saying. You said about 2.9 billion of the 4.3 billion annual bus subsidy goes to interim contracts. And also, the amount excludes provincial allocation. Then you say Limpopo, Northwest, and Eastern Cape. If you can clarify us on that. And something that actually excites me is the presentation that you came to with to us. It's very beautiful. The first page is very beautiful, and the last one. I don't know whether when you put this all this to us, you understood that you are coming to present to the rural representatives. So you know, yes, Halisa. So maybe if maybe you had considered also to, like I asked an issue of research, going into a rural province and also bring us a picture of how does the transport in the rural provinces look like. Because now if you look at this, definitely us who comes from the rural provinces, we feel, but when is this going to happen in our rural provinces? So sometimes when you must check when you go to your presentation, that these people from the rural provinces, we represent the rural provinces, and these things really, they hit. Just like, we are from a province, from a rural. As it does, it's getting later. That Calgary one I like it. So maybe those Kazala go with Lago Popi. As it does, it's better. Maybe it's overseas. Thank you. Okay.
Honourable Member Chikos.
Yeah, Chair, the last one. I just want the presenter to tell us more about DR. You remember we had the Deputy Minister when we were in DR. We were talking about revitalization of DR as a railway junction. So maybe if we can get the progress report of that.
There's a lot of acronyms. You see the page that I mentioned, page 40, CTOG. You know, when I'm somebody else won't understand besides being here, if you can assist us in this.
Yeah, before I give it to you, Chief, this proposed program per provision, it doesn't suit what you spoke about in terms of Section 41 in particular. Because you spoke here, it's a proposed per province for only definite people. What about men on the street? Are they coming up? projects they are not catering for, catered for. Over to you.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, honourable members, for the question. I think, yes, we agree that there's a lot of frustration even from our side as a department, but we will take the questions. Maybe we should start with the TRP one. Oh, the honourable member is out to ask the question. Maybe we should wait for. Okay. In terms of the numbers and where the TRP goes, we have the statistics. We might not have the actual numbers, but we can give a brief overview of where we come from, where we are at the moment, and then where we are going with the TRP. And then we will park the TRP issue and come to the facts of the matter in terms of bus subsidies. Maybe I'll give over to my colleague.
Thank you, Chair and honourable members. The taxi rehab program was actually implemented in 2006 on a 7-year plan, and it had a budget of 7.7 million attached to it, where it was required that 1.1 billion per year would be allocated to the program to scrap 100,000 vehicles. But that's not actually what happened. At some points, we even received one-third of that allocation, which meant that the 7 years wasn't going to be adequate to finish the program. And through implementation, we further realized, or actually had a court case in Taylor End, where we were told, or the ruling was that we had to include an additional 35,000 odd operators based on government's inability to actually issue operating licenses within the prescribed time frames. So the program then moved from having to scrap 100,000 vehicles to 135,000 vehicles. And the time frame of 7 years was not achievable because the allocation being received was not enough. So the department then undertook what is called the funding strategy, whereby we proposed to Cabinet that in the remaining 5 years that we have, to provide funding for 35,000 vehicles that were additional to the initial program, and to also increase the allocation over the next 5 years so that the program could be completed in 7 years. Cabinet in 1999 responded to the strategy indicating that the fiscus is obviously limited. It's not unlimited, so we can't get any sense we require, even though the program is approved. So what needs to happen is we need to scrap in line with the allocations, which means that we will finish when we finish the last of the 135,000 vehicles. But it approved the inclusion of those 35,000 vehicles, and it further approved what we call an increase, an escalation value to scrapping allowance, because we started off on the basis of paying 40,000 per vehicle. The net present value of that over 7 years was not realistic to remain at 50,000. So they proved that we could increase that with CPI annually. And the amounts obviously then went up. So that is why it seems that the program is ongoing. It's not ongoing, it's actually the limitations of funding allocations that has brought us to that. However, in implementing this program, we realized that sustainability of it is questionable. And I think that's the question that the Chair raised in terms of age of vehicles. You know, where do we draw the line? RECAP was meant to take up old unsafe vehicles and replace it with safer vehicles, with the department developed specifications to strengthen what's required to move people around. But we see that if we pay somebody now, and 6 years down the line, the condition of the vehicle is not the same as when we bought it. So we're stuck in a situation of recapitalization is once off. How do you keep the fleet in that condition that we intended the program to be? And that is where Lesiva actually indicated that we're going to be going on for another 2 years in the current state, but we're going to be reviewing the program to make it more sustainable and to address a lot of the challenges we've been encountering in the program.
Thanks. If I may go to the other questions, my colleague will ask to assist me. I think all the all honourable members, the questions that they asked had one thing in common, which is funding. And I would want to generally address the issue of funding. When we talk about subsidies, it stimulates funding for the users of public transport, assisting them with funds to make sure that they afford public transport. Now, how it works is operators will determine the cost of a trip. We call it the economic cost of a trip. And we say this is the economic, the full cost of operating a trip. Maybe we'll determine cents per kilometer. So per kilometer, this is how much I'm going to need for me to cover the cost of operating and make a small margin of profit. Now, government will obviously say, obviously the full cost is not affordable to everyone. Maybe they will say, I will charge 10 rand per kilometer, and the full trip of 10 kilometers is 100 rand per trip. Then what government will then say, will say, instead of charging 100 rand per trip, you charge the user 50 rand, and government will carry the tax. In other words, in South Africa, in any way, in country where they talk about operational subsidy, you pay the difference between what the user can afford and what you pay that difference, what the operator wants and what the user can afford. That becomes subsidy. That is where we are saying every time when we talk of subsidy, funding will come into play. Unfortunately, because of historical reasons in South Africa, our level of subsidization has been low. Now, there are two sources of funding. If we don't make subsidy available to operators, they will have to recoup it on the fare box. This goes to what the Honorable Member asked. What happens to the money that we collect from the users? That money goes to operators because they provide a service. Anyway, he is supposed to collect the full cost of the trip from the user. When the user comes, he will say, all I need is 7,000 a week because he's charging. But now he will say, okay, give me, I'll sell you a ticket for 2,000. I'm just giving an example. And then he will go and get the rest from government. That's where subsidy comes into play. But they collect the fare. Unfortunately, at a level that our commuters can afford in South Africa, the public transport strategy says we should not allow our people to spend more than 10% of their disposable income on transport, which is a commitment that was made by government. So every time when we look at the cost of transport, we look at how it impacts on users. And government will have to come in and pay the difference. Otherwise, the operator will have to go and get that difference from the users. So that is the problem. The issue is that our funding has not been in keeping with the CPI, with the inflation rate. From 1994, as I've indicated, when an operator is faced with an increase in petrol of double the CPI, 11%, labor cost 10%, and the increase in subsidy is 5%, average 4%, it has an impact on the money that you give to the industry. Now, the other thing that affects why the honorable members asked, what do we do with money that we have? The money that we have is not even near where it can cover the cost of transport. That's why we have started with this month-to-month, because when we introduce new services, bus services, I'm talking about bus contracts now. When we introduce bus contracts, new contracts, there are conditions. Honorable members have rightfully said the state of public transport and bus contract is poor. We went to the portfolio committee. That has been our line to say it is poor. We agree. Now, if you put in new contracts, our contract document, which we have developed as a department, put stringent conditions for operators. When you get a new contract, your vehicle must be new. You must bring in a new vehicle. You must operate on time. I think the Honorable Chairperson has raised the issue of time. See, now the operator will have a timetable. If he is not on time, he will be penalized. He must have a clean vehicle so that we improve the quality of service that we provide. Now, for that to happen, existing contractors, when you look at the slides that we have put in here, that 67% of interim contracts are old buses. These people had no reason to, operators had no reason to replace these vehicles by new vehicles, to buy new vehicles to replace the old one from 2003. There are reasons for that. We are on a month-to-month. We can't go to the bank and ask for financing when I'm on a month-to-month extension. I don't have a long-term contract, so I can't go and make get credit for buying buses when I'm not sure that I will get a contract that runs for whatever period. Normally, we are saying 7 and 12 years. That is why they are operating these old buses. Some of them just went ahead and replaced. But to replace the vehicles is a cost, which increases the subsidy. Either it is from subsidy or he must charge the users. So that has been the dilemma, to say, if we want new services, if we want new contracts with the operators, we must be prepared to cover the cost, because they must go and buy new buses so that the quality of service they are going to provide will be to the level that government wants. I've indicated that in a new contract, we do monitor. We are now going to, we do the monitoring. There are two sets of monitoring. There was a question around monitoring. Monitoring a bus operator and monitoring the implementation at provincial level. With a bus operator, when a province issues out, when the contracting authority is a municipality, issues out a contract, they must have an independent monitoring company who will monitor the operator so that they are sure that he's providing the service. If he provides late services, early departure, he doesn't arrive, they penalize him. They are the ones who will run the administration and management and monitoring of the operations to make sure that there is compliance in relation to the contract document. The government is overseeing that process. Every month they will sit, every week they will sit at meetings, so that if the operator doesn't perform, the contract is terminated. Those are tendered and negotiated contracts, not interim contracts, the ones that have never changed. That's the difference. Because in the tendered and monitoring and the negotiated contract, it is a requirement that the contracting authority should monitor the service. It is there in the contract document. In the interim contract, these are contracts which were signed as an interim measure. When operators who had lifelong permits agreed to government to say, we will surrender our lifelong permit in return of contract. Now they signed, they were given 3 years. To say, for 3 years, put your house in order so that when we put out tender, you are able to tender. It was also pushed by labor, the unions, to say, we want to continue. Some of these people worked for years for those companies. Now, as government, when we came with a contract system, we were saying we're changing the labor from being a long-term to contract. Now people are going to work for 5 years. After 5 years, if a new operator comes in, then there's no continuity. So labor pushed for us to afford the existing operator a chance to have, at least in the first round of contract, give the service to the same operator so that at least they continue. That's where the interim contracts were signed. But they were signed on the same terms and conditions that the operators had before the introduction of the strategy, 1996. So in most of these interim contracts, they are still operating the old route. There is no provision. By then, there was no provision for monitoring because we could not penalize them when we have not given them money. So unfortunately, those are the contracts which are not being, even if they are monitored in some provinces, they are not penalized. So it's as good as no monitoring. In terms of monitoring compliance provinces, it is the role of Nation. Currently, provinces are the ones that are running bus contracts, administering them, managing them, not running them, managing and administering them. They report to us, national, and we report to national treasury. On a monthly basis, they submit the kilometers that they've done, those that they've not, the number of passengers, all that monitoring is done. We report on a monthly basis to national treasury. Unfortunately, we could not enter into new contracts because of funding. I'm going to happen this funding because it's a challenge to us, it's a challenge to the Honorable Committee. We have raised it. In fact, in 2002, a study was done which looked at how much do we need for us to put new contracts. It was 25% of the existing budget was needed for us to put new services. That money never came. And we have engaged with Treasury even today to say, there is no use. If we go out today to an operator and say, we would want to put this service out, we'll negotiate on a new contract, we have to factor in the issues of labor, new vehicles, he might go and buy, it will increase the subsidy. There's no way you will have it at the same amount. Either you reduce services so that you, when they say you cut your suit according to the plot. If we go with the budget, we are going to cut the services. We are either going to say, these services you don't provide so that the money that you have fits the service that you are going to provide, which is not a good thing. We can't, in this situation, there is no way we can cut any other service. What we have to do is to go and fight for additional funding, and we engage Treasury. There's a movement there. Obviously, Treasury is saying, show us the plan. We'll make money available. We went to the portfolio committee, and that has been the issue to say, once we have plans, then we can go to Treasury. The challenge that I gave that the plans has to come from municipalities. We are assisting them in terms of trying to put those plans in place. The phase one and phase two issue, we said integration where we bring in taxis and everyone else will need 3 times more than what we currently have, because now you bring in let me also emphasize the fact that not every bus operator in this country is getting subsidy. In other provinces, Eastern Cape, for example, honorable members raised the issue. There are only 3 companies that are getting subsidies, and then one is even paid by the province, AB350. It's Algoa, and then AB350, and Maiboy. In our provinces, you will find that only one operator is subsidized. There are lots of operators operating there. That is historical, and this is what we want to change. Unfortunately, if we change it, you can't change it within the 4.3 billion, because that 4.3 billion is for your existing operators. In Mpumalanga, we have, I think, around 8 operators, 7 or 8. The biggest one is Pasco. You have other smaller ones. But there are a number of operators that we have met. Last year we established small bus operators concept, where we wanted to know the number of operators who are not part of the subsidy. So the current, when we're talking of bus subsidy, it is a challenge because it doesn't affect every operator in the country. It is just because it was historical, where those operators were subsidized for transporting commuters to work, and then we inherited that. It is something that we want to change. But for us to change it, the budget has to increase. It cannot be within the 4.3 billion. More so if you want to bring the taxis into the fold. We are talking of 130-odd taxis, 140-odd taxis in the country, 130,000. If they have to come into the fold, the users of those, let's rephrase, the user, because we're not supposed subsidizing the operators, subsidizing the user. If those users, 60% of the current commuters come into the subsidy fold, it needs 3 times the current budget. So there is no way we are going to avoid the issue funding. We take to heart the comment by the committee to say, sometimes we have to look at what do we do with the money that we have. And it's an option that we have looked at to say, otherwise we will have to go. Maybe somewhere you will find there is a lot of fat you can cut. But in most cases, you will need additional funding. So that is the issue around funding. Unfortunately, honorable members will keep on hammering on it because the fact, and then we will want every assistance that we can. And we have got our portfolio committee. We have presented to them, and they've been supporting us to engage with National Treasury. Let me go and address some of the questions that were raised. The RRT, the BRTs and the RRT, the role of the National Department of Transport. We are overseeing the implementation. The implementation is driven by municipalities. Obviously, through the Public Transport Infrastructure and Systems Grant, and I apologize for us using these acronyms, honorable member. There is a grant. The Public Transport Infrastructure and Systems Grant is the Department of Transport's grant, but it is for infrastructure for BRT services. But it is controlled by the National Department of Transport. They oversee the implementation of these processes, and in meetings they have representation at provincial level and at municipal level. So in the RRT, our colleagues are sitting there. Obviously, the challenges that honorable members face, they might be aware of it, and they report into Treasury, because every time when a city goes to ask for funding, every year they have to go and submit a report before they are given money to continue. If they have not done what they are supposed to do, the lever that the department has got is the funding. They withhold the funding and make sure that things happen as they were supposed to happen in terms of the plan. On the cross boundary issue, it's an issue that is dealt with through the cross border road agency, CBRTA. That's an act that regulates the cross border functions. I think it's a matter of compliance. Obviously, there are challenges there, but there is an act, there's a legislation that deals with the issue around cross border. We have experienced some of the challenges in the taxi industry, but it is all about. Recently, when we had some discussion around the amendment of the NLTA, there was a specific issue on cross border on the taxi side. Then it was referred to the agency, but there's a law that governs the movement. In terms of the transformation plan, the strategy that we have presented today, in terms of the key elements of that strategy, I think one of the things was that we came out was that the current contract, and as I've indicated, not all operators are contracted. Those that are contracted, the routes are obsolete. Most of these contract operators are no longer operating routes as they were in the original contract. You find that the origin and destination has changed way back. Now, that is the reason why you will need additional funding. The other issue was the monitoring, that there is a need to monitor the efficiency of this. But overall, was that there's a need for urgent intervention to avoid total collapse of the system. So that is why we said, while we are moving towards integration as a long-term objective, we need to arrest the situation. We can't wait for another 5 years or 7 years until the contracting authorities have got elaborate plans before we introduce new services. So the plan was that let's arrest the current service so that we don't collapse. Unfortunately, we have not engaged stakeholders on this plan because it needs to be guaranteed in terms of funding. We have engaged Treasury, we still go direct to Treasury. It's a plan which has been approved by MINMEC, and then we would want, when we go out, for us to be sure that it is going to be implemented, we have put in the time frames and the implementation program, but we have not yet got commitment from Treasury that it will be funded. So for us to go and sell it outside, we thought it's better for us to get confirmation in terms of funding. We have engaged the bus operators on the plan to say, this is what we are thinking as a department in terms of the transformation of the bus industry, but it has to be supported by funding, otherwise it will never be implemented. I'm not sure if Jefferson, there's an exigency to the issue, because the honorable member was the one who asked the question for the sake of the community constituency discussion. Through you, Jefferson. Okay, thanks. The other issue was that why Gauteng getting a bigger chunk of the subsidy again? It's historical. The current subsidy regime that we have presented comes from the old services that were contracted in the old Transvaal and all. We inherited those. There has never been a change except in a few that introduced new services, which has been KZN and to a certain extent Gauteng. Now, that has been like that in the past. This is what, honorable member, we are trying to change. To say you can't have poorer provinces getting less. But the picture that we presented here is what has been, what transpired up to today. Because there has never been a change in the contract system. This is what we want to change, where we are saying, let's look. In fact, in 2009, we developed an allocation formula where we want to give more money to poorer provinces than Gauteng and the likes. Unfortunately, that never happened because the increase on the baseline that we got was insufficient, was only sufficient to cover the annual escalation, to cover for fuel and stuff like that. So that allocation never materialized. But the reason why Gauteng and then goes to KZN never changed, honorable member, that has been bad in terms of percentage. 38 goes to Gauteng and then the next was KZN. You'll be surprised to see that 16% goes to Western Cape. And Western Cape only has one operator. But it accounts for 16% of the total budget when it has got one operator. KZN has got, I think, more than 36 contractors, and then they're getting 19%. So this is just historical because not much change has been done in terms of the current contract. PTISG, Public Transport Infrastructure and Systems Grant, has touched on that. It's a grant for infrastructure for BRTs. It's not for building roads. It's for building BRT-dedicated lanes, stations, any infrastructure that relates to BRT services or network services. Monitoring, I touched on that. How long does it take to review the long-term contracts, which were signed in 1997? They were supposed to be reviewed in 2000. Unfortunately, as indicated, the funding stopped, and there was an issue legislated, which was corrected. But the contract, the bus contract, the tenders and negotiated contracts give a lifespan of bus. A contract is not, in terms of the current act, a negotiated contract is for 12 years. At the end of 12 years, you issue out new contract. That goes with the lifespan of the bus. In fact, in the previous contract document, we had, because of the funding issue, we even said an operator can go and refurbish a bus. If it is refurbished, it can operate for a further 8 years. Because we wanted to save on cost. But the lifespan of a bus, any bus that has a chase is more than 21 or 23, 27, yes, it's not allowed. You can't refurbish it, you can't rehabilitate it, it get out of the system. So that is for tendered and negotiated contracts. Interim contracts, unfortunately, they can drive it as long as, because in the contract document, there is no time frame for the lifespan of a bus. It is only through certificate of fitness where it will have to go every year past the COF in terms of road traffic regulations and legislation, where it can still be used. Unfortunately, in the contract, we can't, you know, take it out because we are not monitoring. How many small bus operators are provided for in Section 41? Section 41 is for the future. We are saying when we negotiate, one of the key conditions for us to negotiate with any operator in the country is empowerment. So the provision will be how many small bus operators have been brought into the fold when we negotiate. So it takes it. So it is forward-looking. Currently, unfortunately, as I've said, the current system is for existing subsidized contractors, the one that we presented. The study in terms of Cuba, thank you, Chairperson, we have not looked at. I think we looked at international, but I don't remember us focusing on Cuba. We looked at some of the case studies in South America and developed countries, Asian countries, but thanks for the advice. We will look at that. DOT capacity for monitoring, as I said, there are a lot of regulations. We do monitoring of provinces and of municipalities in terms of compliance, and we report to National Treasure. There was a question on the number of consultants that are used. The consultants are used by planning or contracting authorities. We don't, because we are not doing the design. The designs are done by contracting authorities. They are the ones who go out. In most cases in government, we don't have that as being for few provinces, the capacity to do the actual design, the technical design. You might find that you need external assistance. But that is the role of the planning authority to go and ask for the expertise to do the design, because it has to, you have to have the technical know-how. Those provinces that do have, contracting authorities, whether it's municipalities or provinces that do have the capacity, they do it on their own. But in general, we have seen most provinces asking for internal expertise, even international ones, even the BRTs, even people who have got the know-how. Some of these things we have never done in South Africa. It's for the first time that we are doing. But it's not a national issue. It's the planning authority that does that. I think I've covered some. Okay, there were on provincial details. I think if there are any other details, any further details that are needed from provincial, we are happy to provide the committee that we might not have the information right now. But in terms of how many operators, what is the budget for each operator, what are the names of those operators, we do have that. Any other information that the committee needs, we can make available to the committee. Okay, that was around the issue of dissatisfaction of users. It affects. People are not satisfied with the current level in most cases. This is exactly what we have taken up with Treasury to say. We need, even though it might be an interim measure to arrest the collapse, we need funding because, to be honest, in some of the services that are being provided in the country, leaves much to be desired, and we understand sometimes when people get frustrated. But I think it's the role of the department to go and make a case for us to get the funding. Clarity on this slide, honourable member. The 4.3 we say. About 2.9 billion of the 4.3 annual subsidy goes to interim contracts. This is where these are the contracts that were signed and never put out to tender, which are still operating as they were operating in 1997. This is still the ones that we are saying that's a problem because you can monitor them, but in terms of the contract document that the operator has, you can't analyze it, you can't, and we need to, as soon as possible, change those, either you negotiate or you put them out to tender. Our approach is to negotiate them. And this is where we are saying you need at least 25% additional subsidy to change them. And why we are stuck is because we can't afford. Either if we have to change them with the current budget, we'll have to cut the services, cut some of the services. That's the reality. The amount of excluded provincial allocations, this is where we said Limpopo, Northwest, Eastern Cape, because Limpopo had former Venda and Lebowa, which had bus operations then. For example, Limpopo had what they called Great North Transport. It is state-owned. It was owned by the previous Lebowa Development Corporation. Same with the Venda operations, which was state-owned, and then it was given to small bus operators. Now, when a new government came into place, the provinces continue to pay out services out of their own equitable share. It's a challenge that we have raised to say we have provinces that currently are paying almost 1 billion out of their own equitable share to subsidy, which has to come from the national fiscal. We have tried to raise it with Treasury to say, let's make it available out of the national fiscal so that we can relieve those monies and those provinces can go on and do other services. But it has not, we have not succeeded. We are still going ahead and trying to fight that. The implementation program, Chairperson, yes, it focuses on existing contracts, those that are subsidized. I've indicated that not all operators in this country are subsidized. Unfortunately, when we looking at negotiating, we have to start with those that we are paying, and then bring in those that are not part of the system at the moment. And there's a strong focus on rural areas where we have a strategy on rural, where we want to make sure that there are improvements of public transport in rural areas. Things like non-motorized transport, improvement of quality of services are part of the strategy. So that's why the focus for the subsidy was that it should focus more on rural areas. And we apologize for those pictures, the Area Vaya model and the like. So apologies if we have overstepped our mandate. So in future, we'll make sure that we put the NMTs and non-motorized transport for rural areas and others.
Honourable members, yes.
Yeah,
questions. Okay. Honourable member Jacobs, followed by honourable member
Chair, I raised a question on Northern Cape, Mpumalanga, presidential infrastructure, and those have not been responded.
Okay, that's it.
Chairman, is a follow-up. You could correct me when I became itchy as you were responding, particularly around the stakeholder engagement. I'm very passionate around that. Now, realizing the manner in which it has been responded to, is it not possible that will be provided by your time frame, the program of action? Preferably, Chairperson, before we go for the fair, before we go for the constituency period, so that we know how far we go in terms of talking to our constituencies around this. Also avoiding the situation where we would begin to talk something which is still being under process, not yet approved. It was just that, Chairperson.
Okay. Anything
for you to that? Thank you, Jay. The BRT system in Rustenburg, maybe can you give me a bit more information about it, what is going on there? But I know you say that there's something, you haven't got all the answers of everything, and I think that may be one of it. I want to know what is going on there, why is it coming to a still standstill, exactly what is going on there. Also, what is the amount, the budget amount for the system? If you can give it to me, I'll appreciate it. Thank you.
Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chapter. If I had where the issue around the PICC was the revitalization of the DR, the DR, because unfortunately, if it brought to Ray, issues around Ray, we can provide the answer, but it's another branch, but because we came for the bus subsidies and the rail issues, we'll be doing a disservice, but we can pass the and submit the response in writing if the committee allows. I'm not so sure the person. On the RRT, I would also suggest we give a full report in terms of what the data score is. It is dealt with through our public transport integration network directorate, who oversees all the BRTs in the country. They do have up-to-date information because they sit on the meetings with the province. Can provide that also in writing in terms of the full progress, the budget, and what are the challenges, if there are any challenges. I'll propose we do that. Time frame of implementation, honorable member, we thought the stabilization program will take 3 years, starting from 1314. We are hoping to get funding. Unfortunately, for 1314, we are getting 6%, 5.5% increase in the subsidy. That goes to existing contracts. We are targeting 2014, 15, 16 for 3 years. That's if you look at the implementation program, the proposed implementation program was for 3 years. But I would accept the proposal that maybe before it is communicated outside. Our idea was that we are going back to MINMEC to give it the minister to go engage the Minister of Finance at high level, at political level, so that they push for funding. We in passing spoke to the bus industry to say, we are looking at transforming, and when we transform, we are expecting empowerment of people who are outside. But we said, this is the plan, but for now, until it is funded, it remains a plan. We'll come and communicate to you formally once it is having funding. So that's why we were very cautious that we don't go and start blending it to when it is funded. Otherwise, we will make promises that we are unable to keep. So I would go with the honorable member to say, maybe before we communicate it, let's make sure that it is funded and before we...
Right. You know, what am I going to request is that as you promised that you one or two, you'll respond in writing. What I would emphasize maybe if you can assist us for how long it's going to take to for that submission so that I can give it to the members. Because we are heading for research very soon for these few days. Normally we give people 21 days or 14 days. But there's a commitment. You can assist us as soon as you can for that. So that we, our members can be able to take with in the constituent office. The issue of acronyms, I think you mentioned what you remember you wanted to touch. You were out. I don't know what happened. But you can, yes.
Maybe we should be guided by committee. What time frame we can make it up.
Don't worry, we're not putting you under pressure. That's why I was requesting you that as soon as you get the information, you can submit it to us. Because normally it's 14 days or 21 days.
I think 14 days is more than enough.
Okay, perfect.
Maybe through it, just to recap on the issues that we need to respond on, so that we respond. The RRC one, I think we have captured it properly. Maybe the PICC one, if through you, Chair, we can ask the Honourable Member just to elaborate so that when we ask our colleagues, we are responding on the correct thing.
Yeah, Chair, I was saying there is that presidential infrastructure grant. How do we link it with the Department of Transport? Because there's an amount that has to deal with issues of transport.
Okay, thanks. No, I didn't get it the first time, but we will respond again. We are part of CIP 7. We are part of the PICC, and CIP 7, if I'm correct, the issues on infrastructure for public transport is dealt with. We participate in that. So there's a strong push for infrastructure for public transport in CIP 7 on the PICC. But as I promised, we'll give full response in writing.
Before I close, last one, if you can clarify us the difference, how to control that. Maybe from the two categories, the subsidized buses and the non-subsidized buses, in terms of the prices, how to control that price. Because, you know, it's very simple for people who are not being subsidized to charge whatever they want to charge.
What happened was, in most cases, it is only subsidized operators who are carrying commuting public. Unsubsidized operators, you find they do special hires, long distance intercities, and there it is like in the taxi industry where we talk about meter taxi. If someone wants to use that, there's no regulation because there we don't subsidize like. Your Greyhounds, all these long distance bus services, we don't subsidize. There are very few cases where you find, I don't even know whether we have an operator who is not subsidized but carry commuters. The subsidy was more on assisting the commuters in the morning to work and in the afternoon back home. So that's where the control of the fare comes in. I think we only have one or two in KZN who are operating. In that case, you would find that he is able to generate, because of the numbers, he can make a profit out of the fare box. So that has been the difference. So in non-subsidized operators, there is the regulation on the fare system in terms of your application for operating license. where you have to indicate how much you charge. But how much you increase every month, I mean every year, we're not regulating that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much once more. But it was an experience with members. For myself, for the first time to know that maybe the lifespan of the bus or subsidized transport is plus minus 27 years. It was for the first time. 27 or more. It's 27, yes. That, yes. But I don't think that it can be true if you go and check from PATCO and Golden Arrows. And yes, I know. I'm not defending PASCO, not exceptional. But if you go to Mass Trans, Mamtema, previous it was called Mass Trans, yes. There, I don't think that you can get that there. That 27 years can be chaos. And then also in Chile, I'm just making a practical example. I think that brings an idea that something from the members must be recommended to avoid or to minimize these bus accidents because they touch us and our relatives. Yes, because everybody depends on us. If there is anything wrong such like that, they depend on us that what will be our reaction. Because we can't keep on subsidizing things which is, non-starter. To me, it's a non-starter. But nevertheless, thank you very much. But I'll request members to remain just a few minutes before. From your site, I'll excuse you.
Thanks, Chairman. An order of merit.
Do you know how to save the thing?
Yeah.
All right. Oh.